you know any places any Sega nerds hang out around here?
Sega Nerdcast episode 91. I'm Chris, the editor of Sega Nerds. And with me this week, we have Kopke and Marcin. How's it going, fellas?
What's up? What's up?
What up?
And we're also joined by Jason. How's it going, Jason?
It's going good so far. How are you
nice.
Guys?
Not too bad. It was crazy because this past week, Jason, I just found out that you work at the GameStop, which is like one of the closest GameStops near me. That kind of was crazy. I didn't realize that.
You guys live next to each other? What the fuck?
Yeah.
Wow, I forgot you're in New Jersey.
Because New Jersey.
Yes.
Yeah.
New Jersey.
And which is kind of weird, before I moved from, or when I still lived in Maryland, I had actually lived really close to Blake, who writes for the site. It was just all this weird stuff, you know?
Now you have to move to Chicago to make it complete.
How about you move here to the great state of New Jersey, where everyone wants to live?
Yeah, definitely.
I'll move to New York, and then I'll just kind of drive to New Jersey.
I moved to Staten Island. It's closer.
Yeah, there you go.
So we have a really good show for everyone this week. We got a new release out, Rodea the Sky Soldier, which we'll get into here in a little bit. We've also got quite a bit of some interesting Sega news. We'll run through all the Xbox 360 backwards compatible games that were released last week on the Xbox One. Then we also have kind of a weird story about I guess it happened a long time ago. I'm not really sure on it. Marcin and Kopke, you'll have to fill us in. But apparently an unnamed Japanese game developer, which might or might not be Sega, apparently
may or may not be the company you talk about.
Let's kidnapped.
Let's say a Tokyo Haneda company.
Let's call them ages.
At one time back in the day, kidnapped a game developer so they would not, or kidnapped a game developer's sister, I should say, so that person would not go and work for Nintendo. Weird, weird story, but we'll get into that in a little bit. And there's also a missing game from Westone, which went away as a company earlier. I think it was this year or late last year, was found, apparently, and it actually might be able to see the light of day. Then in our feature discussion, we're going to give our thoughts on video game censorship, which is kind of a big deal going around right now, and I think it would be interesting to talk about. And actually, some people might not know it, but Sega itself has censored, has had to censor some of its games in the past, so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. So, lots to talk about this week, and once we get through all that, we'll talk a little bit about the games we've been playing. But let's get back to our new release, and that was Rodea the Sky Soldier. It was released on the Wii U and the 3DS, and there was also a Wii version that was bundled into the Wii U version as well. I think the first line of releases were the Wii version was included in that. It was released November 10th in North America and November 13th in Europe. This is a game by Yuji Naka, and he also worked with, who is the other team that he worked with?
Pro.
Well, Pro, but they co-developed.
Kadokawa Games. Kadokawa Games.
Thank you, Kopke. Yeah, Kadokawa Games. So they kind of co-developed it, released it out here. It doesn't seem to be doing too well, at least from the way the reviews are going. The Wii U version has a 49 Metacritic score. So Destructoid was the one that rated the highest at a 70. And they said, Rodea the Sky Soldier really hits that sweet spot when it comes to evoking the wonder of flight, but the troubled development process is tangible in the final build. For those of you who can stomach older experiences, however, you'll likely overlook some of its issues and find a lot of love. So what they're kind of talking about here is, you know, this game, it did have a lot of developmental problems throughout its life. It started as a Wii game, which is why there is a Wii version bundled in, and then it got ported over and it finished development on the Wii U. So there's a lot of, it seems that there's a lot of problems with that that kind of translated to the final version of the game. Anyway, Nintendo Life scored it a 60, and they said, when it comes to unique gameplay and classic Yuji Naka charm, the title truly soars. Unfortunately, it suffers from frustrating camera problems, a steep learning curve, and some frequently aggravating combat. And that kind of goes hand-in-hand with a lot of Yuji Naka's 3D games that I think he made from some of the Knights games and some of the later Sonic games. So, yeah, I think camera problems have always been kind of an issue with some of his games, right?
There's also something else for this release. The Wii U version wasn't made entirely by the Pro. It was made by Kadokawa Games. So if you play the Wii version and the Wii U version, they actually play like two different games. Like the Wii has a really stable gameplay, while the Wii U one has those problems you already stated.
Yeah, and apparently the I've read some interviews from Yuji Naka, and it seems like he's really proud of the Wii version for whatever reason. He said that he wants people to play the Wii version. And not just dismiss it. I guess there's a kind of wholly different experience you can get. And I know there's some features in either game that are exclusive to that version. I don't remember what they are offhand. But I like the idea of having a Wii version bundled in with it. But let's get back to a couple of the reviews. EGM gave it a 40. They said hard visuals and unintuitive gameplay make Rodea the Sky Soldier one of the worst action games I've played in a long time. Ouch.
I think Yuji Naka said that he said the preferred game, the preferred way to play was on the Wii. So yeah, I'm assuming it's because of the visuals. He's like, yeah, it's meant to be visuals, and we kind of just maybe half-assedly upscaled it on the Wii U, so.
Well, that's the thing. They didn't do the Wii U version. The Wii U version was a port made by another company, and actually, Yuji Naka is responsible for the Wii version, which is the correct version. And I think that's a problem here, that people are judging the Wii U one, which was the actual release, and it has problems, while the Wii version is the one it should be playing.
Do they have the Wii version on Metacritic or no?
No, they're not gonna. They're rating this as the Wii U version. I don't think anyone. I haven't seen anyone do like a separate breakout review for the Wii version. There was also a 3DS version that was released as well. Now that one does not have enough reviews to actually get a Metacritic score. I think there's only two reviews that Metacritic has posted up to this point. But Nintendo World Report gave it a 50, and they said, there's moments of fun to be found here, but I think I'd better be suited trying my luck on the consoles. At least there I can expect a solid frame rate and finer camera control, but the search for a quality 3DS character action game will continue for now. So, not good, apparently.
Sounds like it's hitting it pretty hard.
Well, what was the last game prior to Rodea? What did Yuji Naka do before this?
He's released the game. He's released a bunch of mobile games.
It was a mobile game for like a sumo thing with a bath and stuff like that.
It's this really creepy bathhouse game where you're in a bathhouse with a bunch of other men. Shit. And I think there's some quasi nudity in it. It's really weird. Then he released another, like I think it was it a whale watching game that he released?
Yeah.
Or was that?
Yeah, but that one was actually really pretty. It was more like an experience rather than a game. It was like a simulator.
There was that one, and then there was another one, because my kids played it. It was like called
Odama
or something weird like that.
It was like a chicken. Like you had to... No, it was like... Yeah, it was like a chicken. I don't know how it's called.
No, I think you're thinking of Kiwi.
Kiwi, yeah. Kiwi the Kiwi.
Yeah, that was another one, but there was another game he released more recently that was you have to find these like little creatures that live in like plants, and you can talk to them, and it records your voice, and it'll play it back. There's lots of those type of games on mobile now. My kids are actually playing another one kind of like that. And what's funny is I actually downloaded that game. I can't remember what it is offhand, but my daughter And Sun played it quite a bit, and they liked it. And I got pissed off because they ended up buying crap they weren't supposed to on it.
Microtransactions. Surprise! Gotta love them.
Screw you, Yuji Naka. Crazy in-app purchases. Cool. So let's get on to the next piece of news. So yeah, the Xbox One, the next dashboard update or whatever, the next Xbox
pretty
experience,
much the
whatever
next,
you call
the
it.
Next system update. It's just like the next OS they're going to be running now.
Right. Yeah. That was released on the November 12th this past week, and with it came a big visual overhaul, but probably the biggest thing with that was the fact that now there are 104 Xbox 360 titles that are backwards compatible. We won't run through the whole list, but we will talk about the Sega games that were released, and these are in alphabetical order. There's Condemned, Crazy Taxi, Golden Axe, Ikaruga, Nights into Dreams, Sega Vintage Collection, Alex Kidd and Company, Golden Axe, Monster World, Streets of Rage. Then we have Sonic CD, and then Sonic 1, 2, and 3. Now, I want to go around and kind of see what you guys think of this list. Were there any games that you wish had made it that didn't? And what do you think of Sega's current offerings?
I think it's a little barren. I mean, I'm sure they could have added a couple of more games, but I mean, the ones that stick out to me... Sonic 1, 2, and 3, they weren't separate.
They were. They had, like, there was two different versions of the digital service they had. They had the Sega Vintage Collection when the 360 first launched.
Uh-huh.
And that was just, like, select games. And then they started doing it later where they packaged them all together. They're actually missing one. I don't know if it's out of the new games or they just didn't add it, but there's also a Vintage Collection for Toe Jam and Earl. That's one.
Oh, that's
two.
Right. Yeah.
I think that they selected the titles so they don't get that much into trouble in how they run into the Xbox One. Because this, if you look at the list of the Sega titles here, they don't have that much of a trouble for running on the current code the Xbox One has. Like, for example, Mega Drive games like Alex Kidd, Golden Axe, and Monster World don't require that much of an engine. And Nights of Dreams was already ported for Linux and PC, so this kind of runs on the same type of engine. Also,
from what Microsoft has said, though, it doesn't sound like they have to actually go back and port anything. It's not any work on the publisher's standpoint.
It emulates it. So the thing is that they're making sure their versions run properly on this new version. So I think if we want to get more games, we have to wait a little bit more on how they run and how they perform. But for a first run, I think it's pretty decent.
Yeah, it's pretty much just a virtual 360 from what it is. It just emulates a 360. What I think is weird, how they have just the port of original Golden Axe, which is the arcade port, and then they have the Golden Axe collection, which already has Golden Axe arcade on it.
I think it has the Mega Drive version.
No, it has the original arcade Golden Axe. I have it. It has arcade Golden Axe in 2 and 3.
I'm surprised they didn't put Virtua Fighter in there either. Virtua Fighter 5. I would personally want to see.
I kind of want to see some of the arcade ports. Like, as much as Climax got delisted and Outrun Online Arcade got delisted, it would be nice to see like Daytona and that Sega Rally remake and Virtual On, because I think Virtual On Cyber Troopers was on there.
For Forest, that's actually there and was kind of an exclusive to Xbox 360.
I'm really excited to see Condemned on there. Condemned is one of my favorite games on the 360, so I was really excited to see that. Hopefully it means that we can at some point get Condemned 2 coming over there as well. I would be very happy if that came. Hopefully maybe Sonic 2006 will come at some point, right? That would be fun for everyone.
I don't think anyone's holding their breath.
I know that there's some of these games that I've bought, but I went through, and the thing that's really making me mad about the new version of the Xbox Store is it doesn't have like a separate breakout for Xbox 360 games. Like, you should be able to go there and find out, like, what games that you've previously downloaded or purchased and that you could come and re-download. But they've not done that. There's not a very intuitive way to go back and find the games that you have that are now backwards compatible and then can re-download them on your Xbox One. Jason, have you found... I know that you've been playing some of these games, so I assume you figured out a way to do it. What was kind of the method that you went through? And I think Jason fell off. Perfect. That was great timing. hopefully we'll get him back here in a minute. But yeah, I even tried just searching, and I found Condemned. Oh, Jason, it looks like he's coming back. I found Condemned on there, but it didn't look like you can actually buy it. So it doesn't look like they're actually selling it. It just is backwards compatible, so I assume... I haven't tried it yet. You can just pop in the disc if you have it, and it'll play. But it's not like they're selling it on the digital store yet. And so it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that. Like, is it just going to be that they're offering these games that were disc only to be able to pop in and play, or will they offer these games to be able to download at some point in the future? Jason, I was just talking about how I'm not very happy with how Microsoft has put the Xbox 360 games on the store as far as it's kind of hard to find them. There's not a separate section for Xbox 360 games. And I saw that you had been playing some. So how did you go about finding the games that you were able to go back and you previously purchased on the Xbox 360?
See, it was weird because I haven't really, like, the only game I think I've purchased besides with this new compatibility was Guardian Heroes. So that's not even up there yet. But it was kind of a bad process, like, trying to buy them in general, because I had to go to the Xbox website and then purchase it because I had redeemed an Xbox card. I purchased it off of the website, but it didn't even charge the money on my account, like the 25 redeem card that I had. So it was just, like, a whole bunch of nonsense and BS having to go through with Microsoft. And it's just... I get the backwards compatibility, but make it, like you said, make it a separate section. Don't make it all this confusing stuff that I have to go through and call Microsoft at 3 o'clock in the morning because I want to buy Streets of Rage.
they really need to figure that out. I think just adding a separate little section in there, it's like Xbox 360 games. You can go in there and, you know, you can scroll through each of the game and you can click on one and it says, you know, if you purchase it, install or download or whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
If not, you can buy it. I think they have some work to do with that going forward. So hopefully they'll figure that crap out.
Yeah. I can't really complain. I mean, I got a free copy of Streets of Rage Collection out of it.
Yeah. That's funny. It sounds like something Nintendo would do with the way they currently have it set up. But let's move on to the next bit of news. So this takes us to that weird story of apparently Sega may or may not have kidnapped a developer sister back in the day to prevent them
not directly
from working with Nintendo. So, right, I'm fairly in the dark when it comes to this story. So, Marcin, you're the one who published it on the website, I believe. Why don't you take us back and tell us this weird story?
So, okay, so as a little, you know, fair warning, it's not for sure, but it's definitely strongly implied. So we're not going to straight out say that it was them, and we're not going to say that it was, you know, they took some guy, put him in a Sonic mascot outfit, and then kidnapped, you know, their daughter. Like, it's not Sega directly doing it. It's them paying the Yakuza to do it, apparently. So anyway, so basically... the Yakuza, if you guys don't know, they have a huge influence in Japanese businesses. So, John...
actually.
Yeah. I'm going to put up my Polish now. So it's John Szczepaniak. His book, The Untold History of Japanese Game Developers, Volume 2. So he had a Volume 1. He released Volume 2 recently. He discusses
volume
that...
Volume 1... Sorry, I'm going to make it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Small parenthesis. Like, Volume 1 was for free on Amazon, so you guys grab it if it's still available there.
Is it still free?
I think so. I haven't checked that. but yesterday
I think it's free with a Kindle or a 30-day trial or something. Amazon's book services.
Amazon Prime, then cancel it by day 30.
You can get the volume 1 for free, so go to Amazon. Get it.
Yes, cheap plug, yes. So basically, volume 2 recently came out, and they discussed that aspect of business in Japan. So basically, he interviewed a series of people under the pseudonym Hideo Nanashi. So that is multiple people disguised as one person. Now, these people discuss various topics about the history of Japanese game developers, including a particular story about a sibling's abduction by gangsters at the behest of a leading Japanese game maker. Now, it's assumed it's Sega based on a couple of things. For one, it happened a while ago, and the reason they were kidnapped is because apparently they did not want the person that John was interviewing to cooperate with Nintendo. So they used that as a threat for him to stop working with Nintendo. He went on to explain that in Japan, the arcade industry had links to organized crime. Basically, the Yakuza is always linked to seedy underworld type businesses. So the arcades were linked to also the gambling industry, so casinos and things like that. So the arcade industry was linked to that. And exactly, pachinko. And that's exactly why the Yakuza had a tie with, apparently, Sega. So this is a quote that he said. So he says, "In Japan, you have these evil companies that always crop up, and unlike the West, in Japan, there's a perception that play is bad, the opposite of hard work." So if you don't know Japan, Japan has a very strong culture when it comes to work, honor. Play is technically not the best kind of thing. So it's like the equivalent of drinking and gambling and things like that. So amusement-oriented industries inevitably become infested with evil companies and ties to the underworld. Take arcades, for example. In legal terms, they're covered under laws regarding the entertainment and amusement trades. So they're managed under the same laws that regulate the adult or pink industry. I'm assuming it's porn, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, that's some weird terminology.
Yeah, so because of that, the underworld gets involved. The only companies that have been able to do business while staying clean are probably Nintendo and Namco, end quote. So, first of all, he doesn't mention that Sega is doing business clean. He says Nintendo and Namco have. There are a couple of other things that he mentioned in the story. He talked about how he personally got someone to toss a arcade cabinet in front of the office building to show that what they did was horrible. He said he smashed in front of their main office in the middle of the night. And the other thing that implies that it's Sega is that the headquarters are
near the airport.
Right, exactly. So their office building is right in front of a major street in a commercial district without any residential homes, and that was Sega.
The only company that has that is Sega.
Right. So I mean, it's strongly implied that it is them. There was another story that was not related directly to the Yakuza collaboration. There was this problem around 15 years ago in 2000, where the same company that he brings up, they used a quarantine room where employees would be forced to stay. So they don't directly make them resign. They put them in this quarantine room so they eventually give up and resign themselves. So they're never going to directly give you the pink slip. They're going to put you in this room and then just kind of mentally torture you until, you decide to leave the company.
The thing is, that would have worked in 2000 before there were smartphones. But right. You put a guy nowadays in a room by himself for 8 hours, and I think they'll be perfectly fine.
Right. I mean, unless they take away their smartphone, but I think they wouldn't go that far either. They wouldn't, confiscate your own phone.
It's
more like a strong implied kind of thing. So it's never going to be a direct firing.
Big speculation.
We're going to keep annoying you until you just kind of leave yourself.
Like what they did with this guy from Metal Gear Solid. I forget his name.
Hideo Kojima?
Hideo Kojima,
thank you. They did something like that with him recently. That was really awful.
They didn't even do it with... It might have been him. It also... There was actually a story about that with the employees themselves. So there's a story with Konami where it was similar to this story where it was more psychological. They don't directly give you the pink slip and fire you. They had cameras that were...
they blocked your IP access for mails and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes, they granted access. Exactly. They hacked into emails. They had cameras to watch every movement that you had that you did in the building. They also had a similar quarantine room kind of thing. So Konami is also, I'm assuming, part of that, because Konami also does a lot of the pachinko slots, so I think they're also maybe tied into the Yakuza, but I'm not going to throw any slander.
Konami's very sketchy. I mean, I think that's probably why Igarashi left, too, with the guy who worked on most of the Castlevanias.
Right, exactly. And you could even see this with Sega, too. This happened many years ago, so they want to stress that this isn't reflective of the current company, the current, motto of the company, so they want to stress that. So
the current one couldn't even kidnap a guy correctly.
Right. But I really feel like yes.
For example, current Sega is like half owned by Sammy, which is the major pachinko operator.
Right.
So
yes.
Imagine how much Yakuza investment is in Sammy.
Well, see, that's the thing. So I don't see how you could ever just kind of leave the Yakuza. Like, you can't just stop cooperating with them.
No,
it's the Yakuza.
Maybe that's why they started making the Yakuza games. They're like, look,
exactly.
We own you now. Make games about us. We want our own game. Make a Yakuza game.
Yeah. So they
make us look cool.
Kiss their ass a little bit,
or,
mean? That's why there's
or it could always be a hint of telling us what's really going on with the company.
Right? that'd be interesting. It's like they're going to make these awesome games and also kind of tell you that help.
Wouldn't that be funny if this was just Negoshi's cry for help, like the past 15 years or so?
Subliminal
why
messages.
Are you listening to me?
By Yakuza 8, you think you'd figure this out? No.
They've been slowly burning me for 15 years. I didn't always look like this.
They have us by the balls. But yeah, it's interesting. The name of the company was redacted because of legal issues, security reasons. I don't know how much they could do if we talk about it on a podcast. I'm not going to say it's directly them, but it's insinuated if you research it yourself. That lawsuit that happened 15 years ago regarding the quarantine room was connected to Sega. That was actually a newspaper clipping that had their name in it and the quarantine room issue. So
that could even be a fun video game called The Quarantine Room by Sega, where you're just sitting in a room on your phone. And it's like one of those kind of like the not virtual reality, but the ones that project things from your actual room into the game. Nintendo did it a lot with the 3DS. I forget what you call
it. Hostage simulator games.
But you have to see how long you can stay in the room reality. And not have to do anything else. Quarantine Room by Sega. I like it.
Hmm. So I mean, like it's interesting. Yeah.
Coming soon to a house near you.
So, I mean, what do you guys think of this story now that it's been kind of fleshed out and explained? Do you think that they could have done something like this?
I mean, it's a practice they do in the Japanese industry. It's not only Sega. It's Sony does that a lot.
Kidnap people?
For example... No, but they do.
Can we get that in a soundbite now? Okay, because they're kind of, pretty powerful...
For example, Sony did a lot of the isolation room, and it still does. It's kind of what they do. But I don't think that kidnapping someone is like really going to the other extreme. And it's also being said that at that time, Sega was kind of a pinch because the Dreamcast was failing, was year 2000, and they were actually negotiating with Bandai and Sammy to make a merger. Mm-hmm. So... it was kind of a tough spot for them to not allow anybody to go in the sets. Also, if you guys have read Console Wars already, they also hint some of these practices being made. Like, for example, they did some stuff like that to Yuji Naka, so he didn't allow him to place his credit on the Sonic games because they were fearing another company might take him or stuff like mm-hmm. that. They hint a lot those kind of practices.
Yeah, and that actually that's a practice that wasn't just you know, in Japan. I mean, in the United States, video game companies did that a lot, especially in the early days of the video game industry, like in the Atari days and things like that. That's why you go back and play some of the Atari games, you never see like a credit screen or anything like that on a lot of those games. But a lot of the developers, which at that time usually was like made by one or two guys, it wasn't huge development teams like there are now, but these developers would go in and put their names in like a secret room or something like that. There would be a way that you can see their name in the game. But it wasn't only just the developers that did this. A lot of the early video game cover artists were also not named. And so that's why I forget his name offhand. He passed away a couple years ago, but we did a couple stories on the website. He did all the cover art for, you know, a lot of the cover art for the Sega or the Sonic games back in the day, and he did tons of other games for Sega, but no one really knew his name, and really this guy is responsible for some of the most iconic video game box art that we've ever seen, and just no one knows about him, you know.
Rick Martin.
What was that?
Yeah, Greg Martin.
Greg Martin?
Martin?
Yeah. That's right, Greg Martin.
Yeah. Sorry. Ricky Martin?
But
we're going to wake up tomorrow.
Anyway, let's keep going on. So this wasn't, right. This wasn't the only story that really came out of this book. There was another one that came out about a missing Westone-developed arcade game called Aquario. Kaki, do you want to run us through this one?
Yeah, so Weston, as you already know, made a lot of outsourcing games for many companies, including Hudson Soft, Konami, and Sega. And they are creators of Wonder Boy Monster World series, and they had this game called Aquarium. But the problem was that they lost somehow the files for it, and they had some kind of backups, and they gave these backups to M2, which is the company that currently ports most of the retro games for the industry. They have done the Sega 3D Classics for Sega, and they have done other ports for Capcom. So the thing is that the person...
They did all the Neo Geo games, too.
That's right. So they have a lot of experience, like porting games and bringing it to other platforms and other operating systems. So the thing is that the people from Weston had this hard disk that they weren't able to decipher, so they gave them to M2, and M2 was able to crack some of the files here, but the files still lack the audio parts. So it's up to M2 to, you know, rebuild the game again. But the problem is that M2 currently is very busy and doesn't have enough time to do that, so let's hope they have some time in the future.
Did they actually comment on this as far as what they plan on doing with it?
Well, they have authority from Weston because Weston is like they were broke. They don't have money anymore, so they practically gave to M2 all the permissions to do whatever they want with the code for this game.
Next.
But as far as M2 hasn't came out and said anything that they plan on doing with it, if they plan on actually making it.
They said we're really busy right now, and we will try to do something with this in our spare time.
Yeah, because there's probably a lot of stuff M2's working on. I mean, they're finishing up the 3D classics, and then
you know there are like four guys only. So
exactly.
Well, we hope that they're going to continue to do some of the 3D classics that hopefully will make it their way over here. But
maybe
more,
Power Drift will have that multiplayer like the arcade cabinets did in Japan. One day.
There we go. Aquario. It would be fun to see that actually see the light of day at some point. So let's turn our thoughts to our feature discussion this week, and we're going to talk about Video game censorship, which is kind of a hot topic lately in the video game industry. There's been a couple kind of high-profile instances of Japanese developers censoring games when they release them here in the West. I mean, video game censorship is a thing that's been around, you know, almost since the beginning of the video game industry, dating back to Mortal Kombat. There was a lot of stuff going on with that. Doom, Splatterhouse was another big one. There's been all this issues of censorship, but in today's current climate, where you know, everything is being forced to be more politically correct, we're seeing a lot more instances of these, and I see it becoming the norm that we're, you know, that there's going to be games that are considered racy that are going to get cut. There's going to be content either censored or blocked or cut out outright when they come from Japan. So one of the latest ones is Capcom is going to be censoring the Armika's butt slap, which sounds kind of silly, but if you guys don't know, Armika is a character that's been announced for the upcoming Street Fighter V. And,
well, it was a Street Fighter Alpha character, and it's now returning for Street Fighter V.
Right. So she was from Street Fighter Alpha. She's going to be one of the new characters. She's, I mean, basically, she's hardly wearing any clothes to begin with. I mean, her breasts are popping out. She's wearing pants, but they're like assless pants. Like, you can see her butt and everything. And I think one of her, I don't know if it's her victory pose or what, but when she does it, there's a point where she turns around, slaps her butt, and the camera kind of zooms in on it. That's getting taken out of the North American version now. It's going to be retained, I guess, in the Japanese version, but here in America, it's going to be taken out. Which, I don't know, considering all the other stuff that you see in Street Fighter, it seems kind of silly to me that that's the one thing that they're looking at. There's also a point when there's a scene where Cammy is jumping around and the camera kind of zooms underneath her, and you can kind of get a shot of like a vag shot. It doesn't show vag, but it's kind of a crotch shot, I should say. And that's being edited to where it's now the view is more on the side, so you don't get that perspective. So that's that one. There's another one that Nintendo removed some of the content from Fatal Frame Maiden of Black Water that was recently released digitally here in North America. There was, I guess, some lingerie that you could get for one of the characters in the game. That was taken out altogether. So those are some of the two most recent instances of censorship. So I want to kind of talk to you guys about that, get your thoughts on some of these issues. Do you think that it's a good thing that these games are being censored and some of the content's being removed that could be deemed as offensive to people, or do you think that it's a bad thing? So I'll throw it to you guys, see what you think.
I don't think it's offensive. I think it's a strange double standard when it comes to censorship, because Fatal Frame is a horror game.
It's already rated
M, right? So, you know, banning some lingerie on a you know, a character, I mean, pales in comparison to what actually happens in the game. So, I mean, if you're, first of all, the people who are playing are supposed to be 17 years old, right? So,
no, actually, it's rated R. So, it's actually adults who were playing this.
Right, but like, that
what he means, the characters in the game are supposed to be 17, is what he's saying.
Okay.
But what I meant is the people who play the game are supposed to be, because it's rated M. So I mean, I don't really see the problem. But that's besides the point. Like they have a problem with, you know, lingerie, but you know, if there's like someone being cut in half, that's okay. You know what I mean? Now, you know, censorship in general, I don't think should exist personally, because I feel like whatever the artist or the creator wants to depict, I feel like it's up to them. So you kind of neutering that vision I don't think it should happen. Like, there are certain games that are outright just banned. Like, in Australia, they banned, you know, certain games that were way too extreme. You know, and we do the same thing here. I mean, and then even look at, like, censorship on TV. Like, there's such strange rules on, like, what you can and can't show. Like, you could show, you know, dick for 5 seconds, but then it has to go away. You know what I mean? Like, it's like these weird rules that we just make up, and, you know, apparently it's supposed to make sense.
It's because people just are so quick to go up in arms about the smallest things. Like, oh, he showed a middle finger. Oh, time to shut him down. That's it. Nope.
Shut it down or blur it.
It's as easy as there shouldn't even be an issue of censorship. It's as easy as take the extra effort and just filter it yourself. Like, if you don't want to see these offensive things, then don't pay attention to them.
But it's as if they assume the rest of the human, like, it's like they assume only the person who created the project has seen a naked person before, and then the rest of the population has never seen someone naked before. Like, we know what a naked person looks like. I'm sure no one goes into the shower and, you know, wears, like, a nun outfit.
Oh my God, what's that?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not like you just go in blindfold and it starts showering and you're like hating yourself because you're naked. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's strange. It's
very confusing.
In general, is odd, but I don't know. Yeah, I've been going on a rant. How about one of you guys take over?
You go, Jason.
I mean, I kind of agree with Marcin on this one that it should be what the developers want to show or what the creator of the games want in their games. Like I was saying earlier, I mean, it's this whole PC thing that this generation's been going on is just nuts, in my opinion. Like, censoring the smallest little things because people want to go up in arms and people want to create a big issue about it. Censorship shouldn't be that big of an issue in this day and age. It shouldn't be. Totally. Like, I can understand it would be taboo, like, back then, like, way earlier, but in this day and age, with all the different types of media we have and all the different types of media to keep control of, it's as simple as just don't pay attention to it.
And that's really the biggest thing is this new generation. They're not happy enough with the idea of if something's offensive to you, don't watch it or change the channel. It's not, they can't stop at that. It's, this thing is offensive to me, it should not exist. And that's a very scary thought, in my opinion, especially with a lot of young people today. You look at just some of the current things that's been going on in colleges, in Missouri, at Yale, here recently, and the idea of free speech is really coming into play here, and it seems like these, you know, younger people don't want it. They don't want people to be able to create what they want to create. It has to be created by what other people say it's okay for them to create. I appreciate some of the things that Anita Sarkeesian is doing with her YouTube series. It's bringing to light some interesting points. Not all of them I agree with, but one of the things that it seems like this kind of, I guess, social uproar that's been happening here in the last couple of years is doing is it's putting a lot of criticism on video game developers who do make content that some people see as offensive. And so now if you're a video game developer and you don't have any women in your game, you might be criticized to the point that, you know, people start banning or blacklisting your game, or you know, saying all these bad things and negative things about it, and then it negatively affects your game. And so if they start doing that, or if they create a video game that may show a woman naked, or someone views it's a sexist type of video game, and people criticize them for it, the next time that person creates a video game, they're now going to have that in their heads. You know, they're not going to be able to just create the vision that they want to make, the game that they want to make, they're going to know that if they do something like this, they're going to have to worry about all this public backlash and criticism on social media and this and that. So some of these developers, you're already seeing it, are now kind of bowing down to these people who are banging on about this and are creating games that, for the sake of making them unoffensive and things like that. It's just and that's really scary to me. One of the things I think is just, you know, if a game is offensive to you, just don't play the game. It's not, maybe it's not for you. Play a different game that you want. Just because something is offensive to you doesn't mean that it doesn't have a right to exist. It's not offensive to someone else. And as adults, we can pick and choose what we see is offensive or what we want to enjoy, what we want our children to partake in. Those are all decisions that we make, but we shouldn't be forcing our ideals and our thoughts on what is okay on other people. It just shouldn't be that way. Now, one of the things that I was thinking about, because this has been an issue that has really bothered me for the past few weeks.
Think that in like the next year or so, it's just going to turn into Revolution X and everything's going to be censored. not have access to video games, music, or movies at all.
I could see it coming to that point. But one of the things I was thinking about that, like, what would be the answer to solve this this continuing of censorship in video games? And one of the things I was thinking of, what if video game publishers released two versions of a video game? What if they released a censored version at retail that would completely eliminate all the items that were deemed offensive and would cause controversy and all of that? They released those games in stores, and those are the games that if you go to the store, you can pick up and buy. Now, online, they could sell a uncensored version that could be unrated by the ESRB or whatever else and would have the original vision, all the original content. You could get it that way. And so that's an idea I had, that maybe that would be a good middle ground. So these, you know, people that want censored games that are unoffensive can go to the store and buy those games. And those of us who want the creator's original vision of a game can also have that. I don't know what you guys think about that.
That makes a lot of sense, but it seems like it would be a lot of work in the end. I mean, to make two different versions of the same game.
Well, they do that with movies. I mean, they do uncut and cut and censored versions.
But the problem is that the problem that is the people, because if this is more a problem that is caused by the consumers, not the company itself, because the company is just bending to what they are asking for. And the thing is that Chris properly said, and Marcin, and you already said, is that it's like this generation wants to live in a bubble where nothing else harms them. And it's just
a safe space!
Yeah, that's kind of stupid. I mean, they cannot live in there forever. It's like they have to grow up someday, and they have to, like, face that, you know, reality sometimes slaps you in the face, and that's how it is. You just have to endure yourself and go on, and that's actually what makes us grow. Because, you know...
Well, I want to take a step back for a second, because I graduated a year ago, so I'm not really that far from that generation, because I'm technically 24, so I'm still part of that group. I don't think
we're both
I would
youngins.
Exactly. So I wouldn't paint a broad brush, as broad of a brush as you would, by saying you all. Because that just makes it sound like everybody.
What do you mean by you all?
Yeah, you people.
Yeah. Okay.
People. But there's absolutely, you know, groups of people who deem things offensive, and you know, some of it might be because of the things we learn in college. It's a possibility there are certain things that perhaps are a little more, so to say. I don't know. Some like for me, even if I learn things in like sociology or criminology, you know, I don't know. I'm the kind of person that is laid back when it comes to things like this and censorship. So, and I know a lot of people who are in my age group who think the same. So because there is one instance or one incident or, you know, here and there, I wouldn't say that the whole generation is like that because
okay.
Look at this from a macro perspective. Whenever you have a generation that is before you, the generation that, like, the older generation is always going to say, well, back in my day it was like this and this was shit and blah, blah, blah. And then everyone who is younger doesn't know, you know, what good is and stuff. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't paint as broad of a brush.
Okay, yeah.
Happy for them dang near second nerd.
I would say that the broader audience right now is that currently thinks like this because it's affecting the whole the whole range, and that's kind of a problem because, for example, somebody who wants to see things as they are gets affected because of this. For example, I'm gonna take it to another example. It's like, for example, we at Mexico are, like, binded to what happens in the United States because we're going to get your version. So if a version gets, like, cut from that, even if all the public here wants it uncut, we'll have to resign to see.
Yeah,
like,
it all
censored.
Depends on the other country. Exactly.
It depends on the other country. That's kind of a bad thing for us. And the other part is, like, it's the industry and the media who has a big responsibility in this. And, you know, the consumers have to remind that there's, like, a market for everybody. And plural things is that what makes us bigger and that what makes us grow. And also, like, you know, sometimes you can't get good feedback all the time. You get bad feedback. But it's also, you have to take the good parts of this bad feedback because it makes us grow. Like, you know, it's not that we have to think all the same way. You know, having different perspectives is what makes you grow and making better things. So
right.
I think that's part of the key thought that it has to be implemented so that these things can be, like, solved in a better way.
Right. I mean, the other thing is, like, where you guys are talking about how maybe in the future everything will be censored. Well, I mean, we still have the Constitution, so you can't just, you know, get
Very
rid
true.
Of the First Amendment. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just get rid of that. So there is free speech. People have the freedom to state their own opinion, and you have the freedom to disagree with that person.
Or you have, like, the freedom to publish certain things of Jackass and not getting hurt.
But the thing is that what we see happening more and more is that, yes, it's more of a change in a lot of ways how people view and interpret the First Amendment. It's you have freedom of speech, but not freedom of the consequences of the things that you say.
Right.
And that seems like it's the ongoing, you know, thought of how people interpret that. And that's I disagree with that idea because I'm sure someone in North Korea, where I think most people would agree, they don't have free speech in North Korea, but someone could say in North Korea, hey, I hate Kim Jong-il, and then he's going to probably get decapitated, or, you know, he's gonna
right.
be assassinated. That's not free speech. And if someone goes on Twitter and posts something that, you know, someone else deems as offensive, and then that person, because they're offended by it, goes and tweets to that person's employer and says, hey, I can't believe you're employing someone who is sexist or says this or views this, and then that person is fired from their job, that's not free speech. You know, it's not.
Well, it's difficult.
There's always a group of people that ruins it for everybody when you think about it.
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
there's always, like, the good people that actually use the right of free speech as you're supposed to, but then there's all these, like, social people on networks and such that just go completely nuts and just take it way out of proportion than it should be.
But it's also selective, so, you know, it is
very selective, I'll give you that.
It's whatever the issue of the day is, sometimes they just kind of latch onto an issue. So if you played Metal Gear Solid 5, and you know the character Quiet, they didn't censor Quiet. When the game arrived into North America, she's still in her scantily clad outfit. Kojima said that, you know, you'd be offended, or you'd feel bad for saying that her outfit is like bad or whatever. Now, besides the fact that once I beat the game, there was no real reason for her to have that outfit. And, you know, sometimes they did like these camera angles that, you know, they zoomed in on her ass and things like that. That didn't have really anything to do with the game. It was really more a fan service. I'm fine with that. But that added nothing to the game. But, I mean, if that's what he wanted to do, that's fine. But, like, you see, nothing happened to her in the game. It arrived and it wasn't censored. So it's really a selective, like, let's pick on this game. Let's just start talking shit about this one. You know what I mean? Like, it's not every single game that comes out, you know, is getting censored. And it's not like the government is personally saying, hey, you have to censor this. It's more of
the industry itself.
Well, it's a group of people, and, you know, they raise their voice, and then, you know, you get pressured to take it down because of, I guess, bad press and things like that.
That's exactly. The media has to be responsible on how they do these things. For example, what they did with Bayonetta was really responsible. The guys at Polygon, it was like, oh, no, this should get banned and stuff like that. I mean, it has a market for everything. And you already know that Bayonetta is that kind of game, so it was really stupid for them to call it like that.
Right.
And that's the thing, is like I feel like there's really, you know, a lot of the major video game websites out there and publications are very like liberal slanted. You know, they if you look at it from a political standpoint, they all kind of slant very liberal, and so you get the same kind of view from a lot of the major publishers, and you see that. And there's really not like, I mean, if you want to say, you know, most of the video game websites are kind of like the CNN of news, whereas there's really not a, you know, a more conservative, you know, website out there that stands up and is kind of talks more about, you know, the freedom of speech and the right of game makers to make what they want. There's really not one out there, is there?
No.
But it's like an interesting issue to consider if this issue is a conservative or a liberal issue, because, I mean, there are people who are conservative and very religious, so you would think that the idea of nudity would be offensive to conservative viewers, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the conservative right-wing groups are, by and large, religious. So if you're talking about nudity, I don't see how they would even support that just because it's not something that would line up with the Bible, especially evangelical, hardcore Christians. So I don't know if they would actually, if when you take nudity and censorship and nudity, I think they would be part of the people who would want to censor.
Right, and you would think that, and I think maybe a decade or two ago, those were the people that were pushing for censorship, especially when it came to anything that had like demonic things in the in the game. I know games like Castlevania and other games that had to be altered when they released over here because they had some
Devil's satanic.
Right, so they had satanic symbolism in it, and that was a big hot button thing then, but if you look at really the people that are shouting the loudest on social media, it's not the religious conservatives anymore. It's the liberal, you know, I don't know if you, the feminists and social justice warriors out there that are the ones that are, you know, really making the most noise and getting, you know, on this train. And you would think, yeah, like you said, Morrison, yeah, it does seem like on certain topics that they would both agree on it despite their political alignment, but at least from what I've seen on social media and some of the stories that I read, it's not really those people who are the ones, you know, really making the issues at this point.
But there's also, you know, those groups, Moms Against, insert whatever issue you have here. They're not liberal groups, you know, like things like violence in video games is still, I feel like more of a conservative issue, because I don't think, well, now it's going to turn political. I don't know if, like, I feel like I agree. It's like a strange dichotomy or like shift. There are certain things that like you would think like if you're a liberal or if you're more left leaning, you're more pro, because you know, pro choice, pro this. Nudity, hey, everyone gets a condom, you know what I mean? Like it's like a weird, it's a weird thing of, like, you'd be censoring certain aspects, because there's definitely people who are like that who would be like, well, this is offensive, because she's naked. But there are things that are, things that might be taken too far. Now, for me personally, violence in video games and nudity isn't you know, anything, you know, bad. I don't know. It's hard for me to actually, you know, come up with a comprehensive answer to that because it's so complicated.
Right. Yeah, and it is, you know, a very complicated situation. But I think at the end of the day, oh, I'm sorry. Did I interrupt someone?
Not me.
I was trying to say something, but my net's just like horrible right now. We'd have to sit and like have a full on debate about this one day.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I think most people would just. I think most people just want video game developers to have the freedom to create what they want, and that's really, I think, the most important aspect out of this, and if you don't, if what that creation is offensive to you or you don't agree with it, I think the responsible and you know, mature thing to do would just be not partake in whatever that is. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't, with, you know, without bringing in, you know, religious views into this, but you know, if there's a someone who has a religious viewpoint that's different than mine, I don't yell at them for that
right.
view, and so I think in a lot of ways that it's really the same thing. So anyway, we want to hear from you guys. What are your thoughts on this, on video game censorship, on kind of the whole idea of kind of the way kind of politics are playing in the video game industry these days and in video game websites? We would love to hear from you on that and let us know your thoughts. So. That is our feature discussion this week. Oh, I also wanted to make one point that Sega has also had to censor some of its games. Some people may not know that Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing had to get some censorship as well. So apparently in Germany, they refused classification on the original House of the Dead, the arcade game. And because of that, when they came to create Sega and All-Stars Racing, they had to remove all references of House of the Dead in the game. There was the House of the Dead track, if you guys remember. So in the game, it was instead titled Curian Mansion. And
it was weird, because they actually censored the Japanese version of the original House of the Dead when they ported it to the Saturn. All the other versions had red blood, and this Japanese Saturn
Japanese
one to have green.
Yeah.
And a lot of people know that, you know, Australia is very very conservative as far as like what they allow over there. They censor a lot of stuff. So when a lot of people don't know, when House of the Dead was released in Australia, it was denied classification. So Sega then had to go back and rebrand the whole thing. They call it House of the Bed. And so everything in the game were just beds coming at you and attacking you, and you're just shooting different kinds of mattresses, futons. I'm kidding. But... House of the Bread, wouldn't that be cool? Just like maybe like different kinds of loaves of bread, slices of bread.
Actually, that would have made sense for Typing of the Dead.
Oh god, it's a shabbat!
Instead of shooting letters.
It was like Carmageddon, how that used to get weirdly censored when those games came out. The original version was just pedestrians with red blood. Some of them got changed to zombies. There was other ones. There was like a robot version. When instead of blood it would be oil, or there was like even, I think it was the Australian or the German version of the 64 one was just dinosaurs, just because.
Well, Mortal Kombat for the Super Nintendo was sweat instead of blood, right? For the Super
Nintendo. Yeah, that was the Super Nintendo one. But then when Mortal Kombat 2 came out, it was just blood.
Yeah.
No, because Nintendo realized how bad it got outsold. The Sega version outsold it so badly that they were kind of forced to do it at that point.
Right.
Yeah, because of the blood code.
There are other two samples. For example, Virtua Fighter. I think it's Virtua Fighter 5, which had like an Afro-American girl. Like the original Japanese version had her like really muscle and like in a really short outfit, and the American version has like this character all covered up because they found bras that a woman had like muscles. And there's another one like Puyo Puyo. For example, part of the reason why it got switched to Sonic is because the original story that was Mado Monogatari, which translates as Magical Tale. The original game has a character named Satan, and there's a part where Arlen Nadja watches his friends like melting their faces and stuff like that. So they decided, like, okay, let's not make that Satan references and this kind of law between Satan and Arlen getting to the kids, and let's just switch it to Sonic. And that's also part of the reason why it got them. There's also a lot of stories with localization, like getting translation of names and places and stuff like that.
How the first Persona, everything got changed into like American references and American names.
I mean,
and it was all Americanized instead of being Japanese original.
It was all about demons, so I'm pretty amazed that this game's made it to America.
So I think that's going to wrap up the show this week. That was a good topic. Like I said, we want to hear your thoughts on that. We're going to be back next week on the Nerdcast. We have Stella Glow, which is going to be releasing on November 17th. So for those of you with the 3DS, you own that. Expect that. We also don't have a firm release date on Yakuza 5, but I know Sega's targeting a mid-November release, so technically we're already at mid-November.
It's probably going to be like December.
Probably. I know that they...
It might be a holiday.
They said that there were some issues with, I think, some of the localization that they were experienced, and they were worried that that might cause the game to slip, but they're still targeting... They think that they can hit that mid-November release date, but we haven't had a firm date on that, so... hopefully
so
we'll get that.
November.
Right. But it could come out this week, and it would still, I guess, technically be the week of mid-November. I don't know. But we'll see on that. That's going to be the next two releases, Stella Glow and Yakuza 5, if it doesn't get pushed back again. So anyway, look forward to that. And also be sure to follow us on the social medias. Twitter is at Sega Nerds. You can get us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheSegaNerds. And also be sure to go check out our website, www.SegaNerds.com. Jason, you have a cool feature or review you're going to post up tomorrow. Do you want to tell everyone what that's going to be?
Yeah, that's going to be a review on the Saturn port of Power Drift, the Sega Ages version.
Awesome.
Because I can't wait for the 3D Classics version. I'm hoping it comes to America.
Sweet. And then Graham, I don't know if you guys remember Graham, but he still technically works on the site. He hasn't been around a lot lately, but he wrote a nice little retrospective on Tomb Raider, celebrate the release of the new Tomb Raider game. He wrote a retrospective on the Saturn version, so that's going to be publishing on the website later this week. Exciting stuff there. I've read his first draft. It's very good, very informative, especially if you have fond memories of the original Tomb Raider, or if you've never even played it before. I think it'll get you kind of excited to go back and play it and experience that first version. You'll notice that I think that is just a good symbol from where we've come so quickly in the video game industry. From the very first Tomb Raider, you look at that, the way it played, the way it looks, everything about it, to today, to the latest Tomb Raider, and you can see just such a drastic difference and improvement in those games in pretty much every respect. So check that out, and of course we're going to be bringing you all the latest Sega news on the website. We'll be back next week, and we are out.